the Vice Squad and search for anonymity pervades the homophile world in the U.S. more than any other nation. At the present time, homosexual acts are illegal in every state except Illinois, where consenting adults of the same sex may do what they please in private. The average homophile fears exposure. It can, of course, mean the loss of his job, friends, and family. It can drive him from his church or other social group. It can impair his usefulness to society, for it almost certainly impairs his self-respect and thus his productivity. It externalizes the alienation that haunts most homosexuals internally. It is this fear, in addition to the condition of homosexuality itself, that is most responsible for the emotional and mental turmoil of the homophile. For it drives him to a life of lies, deceit, duplicity. It imbues him with guilt, shame, loss of self-worth, and even a sort of horror of himself. Listen to a young homosexual from Orange County, California.
Well, I think you have to live two lives. The life that when you're working, you're careful. You don't throw it in everybody's face. When you go out to the theater, you eat in a nice restaurant, or you're walking down the street. There's no need to broadcast it. And you are careful. And then when you're in the privacy of your own home, you have friends over, you can do what you want. Or you go to a homosexual bar or different gatherings, then you're the homosexual.
A 27-year-old university graduate from Salt Lake City remarks,
"But it's a lie. I don't enjoy lying. I don't like to. I feel that there should be anything in my life that I should have to lie about. I have guilt feelings in the fact that I have to lie in order to maintain my integrity and my acceptance in society. I wished I didn't have to."
This same young man displays a trait familiar to therapists, that of actually finding stimulation in breaking the laws governing homosexual acts. In every other area of his existence, he is a high-minded and law-abiding citizen.
Unfortunately, physically, I exist in a male body, unfortunately or fortunately, whatever, I am attracted to a man. There's kind of an element of excitement and challenge in the fact that it is against the law, and the element of trying to be able to go out and be a homosexual and try to meet someone in an environment that you know is dangerous. In other words, the fact that, you know, it's against the law, that sort of stirs up your interest to be able to go out and get away with it and not get caught.
But most homophiles would agree with H.L. Mencken, who said, "Injustice is relatively easy to bear. What stings is justice." And homophile leaders in Los Angeles, Chicago, New York, and San Francisco have accused the police of harassment, entrapment, and brutality in their enforcement of the laws. The police countercharge that homosexuals are trying to establish a fruit world. In any case, tension and bitterness between the law and the homosexual is frequently relieved in homophile humor and song.
Down by the river drive, down by the river drive, I thought that he gave me the eye as he was going by, down by the river drive. He asked me if I had a light.
Wait up.
He gave me quite a fright.
Wait up.
There in the bright moonlight.
Wait up.
There was no one in sight. I thought that he looked simply great.
Wait up.
His eyes said, "Make a date.
Wait
down
up.
By the river drive."
He ain't gonna cruise that drive no more. Ain't gonna cruise that drive no more. Ain't gonna cruise no more, no more.
I gotta move it right along while I sing this little song.
Ain't gonna cruise no more.
Well, it dawned on me this guy was straight, but I could hardly wait. I left it up to fate. He'd be a festive date, but right before my very eyes, I got a big surprise up on that river drive. He pinched me while he flashed his club, he said,
"Come on now, Bob, you've made a final club, and there's one less in your club."
He took me to the station house.
Yeah, yeah.
That guy was quite a louse,
yeah, yeah,
up on that river drive.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the judge, he gave me 30 days and offered this advice.
The drive is just no dice, and it's full of sin and vice. When you get out, I think you'll find you won't see your kind hanging around that river drive.
If there's a moral to that story, it is that decoys or entrapment will fail to deter or even curb homosexual activity. But again, the possible side effects of arrest threaten the homosexual constantly. A homosexual from the East Coast who held a position in the civil service, whose stiff anti-homosexual regulations govern 93% of all federal employees, is highly reluctant to accept his homosexuality. He refers to his own kind as they, never we.
I think perhaps this is the greatest fear, is loss of employment, perhaps the disgrace that might come along with it, and even publicity in the newspapers, which sometimes accompanies this sort of thing. And I don't think the police department recognizes the situation. They only seem to be interested in making an arrest and thereby ruining people's lives, and I don't think they realize the damage that they're doing. I think if a person carries on, becomes very obvious and carries on in a public toilet or out in public places where it's disgusting to the public, I think then they're asking for trouble. But if they're going into a bar, they're minding their own business, and they want to socialize within that bar with their own group, I don't think they're breaking any laws. They should be given the same opportunities as other people to lead a regular life, and what they do in their own private homes and so forth is their own business.
His sentiments are supported by a graduate of West Point, who attained a very high rank before he was exposed through blackmail.
I believe that it is a normal reaction for man to love, and this love can be given to a dog, kitten, another man, or a female. For the young man that's teetering on the fence between homosexual and heterosexual life, condemnation by the family or the society about him of homosexuals and the realization within himself that he has some of these qualities would tend to drive him deeper into this withdrawn self, which would in itself bring out more of these qualities rather than having him seek more than what you call the normal life or free association with everyone. In the military, the man who becomes known officially, let us say, as a homosexual immediately is, you might say, castigated socially. Certainly in other media this is true too. Of course in other forms of business like entertainment world it may help you get a job. But it should not be a measure of whether you get a job or maintain a job or anything else, and all I hope that is at one time that the young man who is a homosexual will be able to face his military obligation with hopefulness, with expectancy, a time for him to grow, to see the world, to do other things that his brothers, who we claim are normal, do without fear or intimidation. Now he must learn when he can do things and to keep his military life, his duties, you might say, and his social life or sexual life separate and in good taste. There is no bribe in the world capable of making me tell any top secrets or secrets or making me do anything against my country or do anything to harm my classmates from the academy or any of my soldiers. There's nothing in the world.
In effect, this Freemasonry of kindred feeling is echoing the lady who, at the time of the celebrated sodomy trials of Oscar Wilde, said she didn't mind what they did, so long as they didn't do it in the street and frighten the horses. While such a permissive view has greater support today than ever, it is light years away from rigid reactionary Mosaic law which the Christian Church inherited and which still has enormous influence in England and America. Nevertheless, the Church of England and powerful Roman Catholic groups have given surprising support to the now famed Wolfenden Report, a study by church, legal, and government leaders which has been debated in Parliament since 1957 and approved by the House of Lords. the government-appointed Wolfenden Committee feels simply that private morality cannot be legislated, that one cannot try the mind of man, and that restriction of the individual's freedom of choice in areas of private morality is itself morally improper. It concludes that homosexual behavior between consenting adults in private should no longer be a criminal offense. A similar recommendation was adopted by the American Law Institute, which says that deterring sexual behavior because it might be sinful, morally wrong, objectionable for reasons of conscience or of religious or cultural tradition is the responsibility of religious and social bodies and not of the state. Enlightened religious leaders tend to agree, and while they are far from being in accord on their judgments, there is creeping progress. A highly influential report from the Quakers in 1964 declared that homosexual affection can be as selfless as heterosexual affection, and therefore we cannot see that it is in some way morally worse. Further, they charge that a distorted Christianity must bear some of the blame for the sexual disorders of society. These next voices bear out that charge.
I met someone that I became so interested in that we had our first sexual relationship, homosexual relationship, and it disturbed me very much to continue in the religion because they preached that this was sinful and against God's, you know, laws. So I couldn't very well remain a true, what they call a true Christian, by breaking their laws, so I got out of the church. I didn't get out, they pushed me out. They had a little meeting, and I had to plead my guilt before them, and they just, what would you call it, excommunicated me from the church.
It is no small tragedy that many homosexuals are made to feel they must choose between God in heaven and man on earth. The editor of a number of publications directed to homophiles, among them U.S. Cruise and World Report, comments.
The Catholic Church can accept them or not accept them as they damn well please. It has come to the point now where we use what I will say to the Catholic Church, I don't care, because sexuality is stronger than the crucifix. The Protestant churches are not, most of the Protestant churches are no longer so imbued with the idea that the homosexual will ruin them.
And a homosexual who addressed a clerical group in Pasadena, California, states,
with the law, if the church could work to restore society's faith in the homosexual as an individual, and the homosexual's faith in himself, and get us out of the bars and into doing something that's worthwhile, and I don't much care what it is, because we could be fertilizing flower beds in Pershing Square, and it would be more worthwhile than the way 2/3 of us spend our time.
A minister from Detroit, who covertly practices homosexuality, comments.
Well, when I was coming up, I remember that I was anxious about my homosexuality and felt that it was wrong at the beginning. And I went to a minister, a very famous minister, who had a radio program. And I'd heard about him, and I went to see him. And he gave me very puerile kind of counsel, which was, well, date some girls and go to dances and this sort of thing, which was not really an answer at all. And I was completely disgusted by the whole thing, that I'd gone to the church for help, and I had asked the minister to counsel me. He gave me stupid advice, and then the member of his congregation tried to put the mank on me. And so I just felt that the church was not the place to go for help with regard to homosexuality.
This same minister challenges his fellow homosexual to seek truth and to touch reality through something other than his sexual skin.
My personal feelings were then pretty much what they are now, that homosexuality
ought not to become a way of life for anybody. That is, it ought not to be the lifestyle of any individual. That I was interested in Christianity as a lifestyle rather than some other subculture, which I think homosexuality can become for people. And this is what disturbed me about the people whom I knew at college, who seemed to abandon everything that they had culturally in favor of giving themselves to this as a lifestyle. And I thought this was sad, to see everything, to see the world from this point of view, and to interpret all events and all culture and all literature and music and life in general, all relationships, in terms of one's own sexuality, or even worse, towards an adopted kind of attitude towards sexuality, which was, I think, which I think is an inadequate one for to make a lifestyle from.
Chicago's father, James Jones, former prison chaplain and an Episcopal rector, is sympathetic to the plight of the homosexual, but blames him for allowing his sense of specialness to separate him from the church. Here he is in confrontation with a homophile.
The theology of the church in regard to sex is not in conflict in regard either to heterosexual or homosexual activity. A lot of guys, a lot of men I know have had affairs, or at least have wanted to, you know. Somehow they're able to continue to love their God and say their prayers and what have you. I sometimes wonder, how come, again, if homosexuality is so damn natural, how come the homosexual cannot more naturally participate in the church, which is a hospital for sinners, not an old age home for saints? Everybody else in my congregation is sinning, see? Right. Everybody. And somehow, by the process of redemption, makes that greater good come out of whatever evil he's been participating in, which is the redemptive process of the Christian religion, and looks up at that crucifix and understands that. But somehow the homosexual seems to get hung up over here, that he is something special. His sin is something so great and so unique and so marvelous that he can't join the general sewer of humanity. And this I challenge the homosexual with. I really do. I challenge the homosexual to stop being so damn proud. His sin is pride, not sex.
But you're talking about a 20-year-old kid.
Oh, no.
Not a mature homosexual.
Not at all. I'm talking about a bunch of proud fags.
Well, they're young, though, aren't
down,
they?
Who can't
they
come
young?
Down to earth and face that they're no more or less sinful than anybody else.
But aren't all 20 years old?
Yeah, but now there's no accident to this. And you see, this is the psychological problem, and it is the degree of a perpetual infantilism, if not perpetual adolescence, the degree that exists in homosexual culture.
But sex is the sport of adolescence.
Yes.
And to participate sexually, you've got to keep yourself
and
on adolescence.
And it gets a little boring to hear a bunch of 50-year-olds sitting around talking like 16-year-olds.
That's right, they should be out with adolescence.
Well, pardon my bag, man. You know,
As Oscar Wilde put it, the sins of the flesh are nothing. They are maladies for physicians to cure, if they should be cured. Sins of the soul are shameful. Yet the religious homosexual must wrestle with forces other than the sin of pride. Here, the homophile son of a bishop.
I can't really speak for everybody, but if your father is a very well-known theologian and is very strict in the ways of the Bible, you just cannot go to him with something like this, because in his mind, something like this just does not exist. Because if it isn't from Genesis to Exodus, it just does not exist. And I got the conclusion, oh, what are you going to do? Are you going to be a hermit or what? Are you just going to be completely sexless the rest of your life, or are you going to look for, you know, enjoyment where you can get it?
This same young man first tried to resolve these conflicts within the sanctity of a heterosexual marriage. Today he has a 2-year-old son, a divorce from his wife, and a homosexual partnership which has brought him little peace of mind.
I think this problem with me right now is very critical because I can't make up my mind which way to go. I realize I cannot have both. I have got to make up my mind. Either I'm going to go into the what's so falsely labeled the twilight world, or I am going to go into what is so, again, falsely labeled as respectability. I mean, I have no family, no nothing to stop me from doing this. But yet there's something that stops me from accepting it all the way. And I think this is one of the problems when I'm at the crossroads right now, which I don't really know which way to go.
On the other hand, some homosexuals apparently feel they have sufficient heterosexual orientation to make a marriage work. They have married not because of their homosexuality, but in spite of it. Paul is 23. His wife is 20. They live in the Northwest.
I'm not jealous. In the least. I'm not afraid of it. It doesn't bother me. It's just one of those things. Why should I let it bother me? It doesn't have anything to do with me. It doesn't have anything to do with our relationship. I am heterosexual. I cannot even put myself in the shoes of a lesbian to try and understand. There are certain aspects of his life that I will never be able to understand, but this doesn't mean that I can't say he can't, it's not his fault that he's this way. He's got to learn to accept it, and I do too. I can't put the strings on too tightly and say, all right, no. It's got to be just me and no one else. Because I am not capable of fulfilling him completely because he has needs that a heterosexual man does not have. I have to just learn to accept it and realize that he loves me for myself. That he needs me in ways that he doesn't need men. And he needs men in ways he can never need me.
What do you then find in a woman that you don't find in a man?
I think the main thing I have found is that I can find sexual pleasure in a woman. By that I mean I can reach a climax.
Well then, if you find that much pleasure in a woman, then why do you still feel a need or desire for a homosexual relationship?
Because that only fulfills part of the aspect of my sexuality. The other part is a psychological aspect of it. And this I can only find through a man.
What is that psychological aspect?
The love of another man, for me.
One can question if Paul has faced the internal remorse, guilt, and eventual shame of this marriage, and if his wife will be able to withstand the internal conflicts and problems that are virtually beyond solution. A young man from Utah is one of the uncountable millions who would like to have an answer.
Yes, I've often thought of that, most definitely. Why? That is the big question of every homosexual. Is why am I what I am? And my personal opinion is, I've never found a satisfactory answer. I do not know today any more so more than I did then or at any time. And I have never known anyone who couldn't answer. But I don't know why. I know that that being homosexual is not easy. It's quite naturally, it's not accepted. But when I am able to make contact with a man, I feel that this brings a deeper satisfaction and gratification for this need of being accepted and being not alone than it would if I was with a woman. Not that I want it this way, not that I like it that way, but that's just the way it is within me. And I've tried to change it, and change it I have not been able to do. And why I'm this way, I don't know.